weekly lesson, Lessons from the Dojang. Your midweek lesson. It's your co-host, Master Patsy Zarrillo, with me as always, your other co-host, Frank Natel. Frank, how are you
doing? I'm wonderful, Master Patsy. Thanks for asking, and thanks for having me as always. Thanks for co-hosting this with me. It's one of the highlights of my week.
Yeah, I really do look forward to our Wednesdays. I really do. We probably gonna have a lot to talk about on one issue. So why do you say we jump into it a little bit? Today, we should start this off by saying yesterday, the House Judiciary Committee and the chair, Representative Nadler, yesterday pretty much told AG Barr that if he wasn't willing to give the Mueller report, the unredacted Mueller report, to Congress, or I don't think they actually wanted it by today, but I think he wanted a commitment that they would get it. You know, they wanted that commitment by today, that if he didn't get that, then he would, that they would vote to subpoena the Mueller report and documents. And guess what? They voted to subpoena them. And again, Representative Nadler decided to give AG Barr a little bit more leeway and told him that he would give him time. And I didn't see where he said how much time, but he said he would give AG Barr time to get the report to the Judiciary Committee. I guess my question, Frank, because, you know, this is definitely your, you know, this is in your wheelhouse. This, first of all, I think maybe I should ask you, is this something that the Judiciary Committee basically, I don't want to say has a leg to stand on, but is basically standing on the entire stool here?
Yes and no, and I'll go into some detail. Can you hear me? The issue is this. I think that at first, with a subpoena from Congress, it's basically you have a document that is legal in nature, of course. Everybody kind of gets that from the basis of saying a subpoena. But it really is standing on the legs of the congressional authority itself and saying to whoever receives that subpoena, you should honor this because it's the United States Congress that's subpoenaing this information. And as another department, well, as a department within the government, the Justice Department can defy that request and say, we're not going to give it to you. And then that would lead to either one of two things. Congress could try to use its own authority and hold the governmental entity, in this case, the Department of Justice, Attorney General Barr, in contempt of Congress, and then, you know, enact any or bring down any kind of justice upon him that they think is necessary, that's within their purview, which I don't know right now off the top of my head what that kind of punishment would be. But I mean, I would imagine if you're in contempt, they could order some kind of, you know, fine, or I don't want to speculate. I need to look into that. But the authority is they could try to hold him in contempt of Congress on their own authority, or they could bring him to a court, a federal court, and then try to enforce the subpoena through court. And if the court rules that it's a legally sufficient subpoena that's not overreaching, and we talked about this, we alluded to this last week a little bit, of what would be kind of the legal arguments around what should be pared down and what shouldn't be pared down, the court would make a determination as to whether the subpoena is legally binding upon the Department of Justice Attorney General Barr, insofar as that he would have to produce the report and into what extent he would have to produce the report. So those are the two prongs that give the subpoena weight.
Okay. So I guess I just to clarify for people, because I bet they might be a little confused. Whenever you say it has to go to a federal court, I'm assuming it would be a DC court. It's, I guess, one of my bigger question is not, it doesn't mean that because it's done in Congress and the Attorney General's office and all that, that it's immediately going to go to the Supreme Court.
I think my assumption is, we talked about this last week, I think that they would probably try to get it straight to the Supreme Court. I think that they would rather go to the final answer, the final authority on this, because it would ultimately be a question for the Supreme Court if it was appealed up. The Supreme Court could grant the right to have it heard if they present a motion, either side presents a motion and says this matter should be heard by the Supreme Court because it's a matter that ultimately would end up here anyway. So I think it would probably go to the Supreme Court first anyway.
I guess my question is, it's not the law or rule that it goes directly to the Supreme Court.
I don't believe so. I believe that you could institute in the district court, in the District of Columbia, federal district court, you could probably institute the enforcement. You could ask for the enforcement of the subpoena there. I would assume, because those offices are located in the district.
Right. But just to expedite things, they would just take it to the Supreme Court.
I would think so. I would ask for what they call certiorari, or a right to be heard, or it's by the discretion of the court to be heard. So they would have to ask the court to use its discretion to allow the case to be heard. And I would assume they would grant that on a matter of this level of importance, you know?
Mm-hmm. Let me, according to an article in the Times, in the New York Times today, April 3rd. Mr. Nadler stated that it is a matter of law. Now, of course, let's be honest, this by its very nature is political.
Right.
Right. So I'm not strong in taking Mr. Nadler's word at face value, because this is by definition a political thing. But his quote was wrong. Information from this committee is entitled to all. This isn't just my opinion; it's also a matter of law. And I think he's kind of alluding to the president said during the investigations of both Bill Clinton and Richard Nixon. And again, I'm just reading, Frank. I wouldn't know this stuff if you gave me a year. It also the article also, you know, backs up what you're saying, but practically speaking, the subpoena does not ensure Congress will get what it wants. Mr. Barr could stall or outright deny the request, leaving the House with two options to enforce the subpoena: contempt of Congress proceedings or a court case. Both would take considerable time. I guess here's a big question for you. We're 2 years out from the election, right, from the next presidential election, and you got everybody who's a registered Democrat running to be president at this point, or at least everybody but, you know, like three people that I know, it seems like. Is it possible... Or let me ask you this more realistic. Is it probable that this thing is, if Barr continues to fight this and this thing gets drawn out, that it could come to a head during the 2020 election?
I don't think it will take that long, honestly. I think that if the Democrats reach a breaking point on, you know, saying we're going to go to court and argue this, I think that happens a lot sooner than the 2020 election. I think it happens a lot sooner than most of the primaries and things like that. I think it will take place this calendar year. I think it would take place probably in the court's fall session, likely, you know, sometime in the fall session before, you know, you get to the holidays. Because it's a matter of that level of importance, I think they'll fast track it. So, yeah, that's my take on it. I don't think it would take that long.
So you're thinking somewhere, let's say, between August.
Yeah, and probably like September, October, somewhere in that time frame. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, let me ask another question I have for you. I am, at this point, pretty much convinced that no matter which way this goes, Mueller's going to be testifying in front of this committee, either by subpoena or just by invitation. I really don't think that's a matter of if. I think it's a matter of when. My two questions for you. Number one, do you agree with that statement? And number two, is there a difference in how he will respond to things if it's by invitation or by subpoena?
Yeah, that is a tough question. I mean, I think that if he gets a subpoena, they will provide him the cover to answer as much as, and again, subject to any challenges to the subpoena that the Department of Justice would issue, it would provide him the cover to be as candid and forthcoming as I'm sure he would like to be, as opposed to just by invitation. Then he would have to cover himself by saying, you know, I can't answer certain questions. But if they subpoena him and they say that everything that he worked on, everything that he put into the report is subject to the subpoena, questions about those things, about the processes that he used to reach those conclusions, et cetera, et cetera. And if that subpoena goes unchallenged, or if the subpoena does not get stricken down in part or in whole, then it would provide him the cover to answer as candidly and completely as possible. And I do think there would be a difference based upon a subpoena versus an invite.
Wow. Yeah, you know what? I'll be honest. It kind of seems like and this is going to sound maybe a little more dramatic than maybe it is, but it seems like if it was a subpoena, then it would kind of force his hand more than if it was an invite. Although I don't think he's somebody or is in a position or ever even thought of, you know, holding things back. It's just he I don't want to say he's going to be more compelled to say things that he wouldn't under an invite, but
absolutely.
You understand what I'm saying?
I think it's counter to most times when, for example, let's say I'll just give a quick example. Let's say I have a case where I have a trial, and we'll just use a medical malpractice trial as an example. And I have a doctor who treated my patient, my client, and that doctor did nothing wrong in the case, wasn't the subject of the suit, but has some great information about my client's illnesses or injuries subsequent to the person who did wrong by my client. And I call that doctor and I say, I'd like you to come testify at trial to just tell the jury what you observed. And the doctor says, you know, I really hate trial. I don't want to go to trial. I don't want to be there. It takes away from my practice. It takes away from my time in my office. And I just don't want to do that. And if I say, you know, let me think about how I can convince the doctor to come that day. Maybe it's, I just heard some things from him. He doesn't want to leave his practice. He doesn't want to leave, you know, his patients, and he doesn't want to take time away from his life. Maybe if I can accommodate him some way, what is he losing out financially? What is he losing out time-wise? Maybe I can take his deposition and use it at trial. Maybe I can pay him for his lost time. But if I say, screw that, you know, I'm not going to go through all that process. I'm just going to subpoena this guy and make him come to court and testify to what my questions are. Well, in that circumstance, that subpoena is just going to piss him off or her off, right? They're just going to be like, you know, I told you this bothers me, and then you force me to come with this subpoena. So it has a counter effect, and it's not a very good way to get somebody to come testify. However, in this circumstance that we're talking about with Robert Mueller, I think it's a different thing. I think it's one where it provides cover. It provides an opportunity for Robert Mueller to say, look, I didn't just voluntarily go there. They used their congressional authority, which I understand has weight and requires me to be there, requires me to answer all these questions that they're going to pose to me. So that's why I'm going to go, and I'm going to be open and honest.
Yeah, I and you know, it's not like he would be there to use a television metaphor, right? He wouldn't be like there as like a hostile witness, right? Even if they subpoena him, I mean, this guy was put in a position to do a job, and he's going to tell the committee what job he did
exactly
and what he found. And it's like that subpoena is almost, as you said, kind of giving him cover. So they're almost doing him a favor.
I think so. And you don't, and you know, I think for every moment that he spent in this case, from the moment that he got appointed as special counsel, I'm sure he knew that someday that it could end up with him in front of Congress.
Yeah, I would think so too. This guy's
been down this road. So let me just real quickly jump into something that I think that is the crux of the argument, you know, right now as to why the report's not being issued, why the report isn't just being handed over. And this is, I think it's important for our listeners to understand. This comes from that same article you were quoting, Master Patsy. I want to give credit to the New York Times for this information that I'm going to supply. It just goes over the four items that the special counsel and Mr. Barr, so really it's Mr. Barr, are saying that needs to be addressed before they turn the report over, okay? Classified material is number one. Secret grand jury testimony is number two. Details pertinent to law enforcement investigation is number three. And number four, and this is the real catch here. Listen closely. Number four is this: statements that would unduly infringe on the personal privacy and reputational interests of peripheral third parties. I'm going to read that one more time. Statements that would unduly infringe on the personal privacy and reputational interest of peripheral third parties. What in the hell does that mean? And what in the hell does that include? So, I mean, that's where this thing falls apart. Because I could see the Judiciary Committee saying, and the Investigations Committee saying, okay, classified material, secret grand jury testimony, and details pertinent to law enforcement investigations. Those are identifiable things. They're probably like objectively quantifiable items within the report. But what in the world constitutes statements that would unduly infringe on the personal privacy and reputational interest of peripheral third parties? How do you identify that? And how do we know what that exactly excludes from the report and whether it legally excludes it? So I think that's where this case will fall, you know, rise or fall in the courts. If it goes to court and that's the argument, they're going to have to put before the court, who are these peripheral third parties and what are the statements and why should they be scrubbed? So I think that's quite frankly a losing argument for Attorney Barr to take, Attorney General Barr to take. And I think it's a matter that the Democrats on this committee headed by Jerry Nadler should force and say, we're not going to accept that. You know, you can scrub those other three items, but you can't scrub what you identify as statements that would affect peripheral third parties.
Wow. Okay. Then I have a couple questions for you. And you touched on a lot. So let me ask you a question, answer it, then I'll ask you another question, because there really are two different, they're going into way too, two different directions. The first question is, do you think that is simply a stalling tactic, that he's just trying to just draw this out as long as he can?
I'm speculating that partially, yes, that is a stalling tactic, but I also think there is some party in there, because there was a case that was little reported upon, a little known about recently, where somebody was in court representing an anonymous party, anonymous company, anonymous corporation that has remained anonymous, and asking that they not be outed to the public to have been involved in this investigation. So their attorneys were in court on a sealed matter, and their name has not been released to the public yet. So I think that there is something to this that's more than just, it's more than just a stall tactic. It's a chip that is being called in by this corporation and whoever's very powerful and has some sway with him and the government. And they're telling him, you better get our, you better keep your, keep our name out your mouth, so to speak.
And that, and so I guess my second question then is, and probably the bigger point, you had mentioned ongoing grand jury activity.
Yep.
I would think, you know, just like I said, again, not having the exposure and the education in this matter that you do, that would almost be the bigger part of all of this, right? How does that affect this whole thing? And is this something that it, because the grand jury is still in session and is still being and is still active, is that something that plays in Trump's and, for lack of a better way of putting it, the Republicans' favor?
Only to the extent that it does delay things. I mean, it delays, yeah. it necessarily and absolutely rightfully delays certain things about that grand jury. But ultimately, it's not a good sign. It's not a good sign for the people that are subject to that. And those are all people that were connected some way to the Republicans and the Trump, you know, the Trump administration. So
the Democrats are going to have to be pretty cagey as to the timing of when they subpoena Mueller.
Well, I mean, it depends on whether they accept the fact that the grand jury stuff isn't going to come out, you know, that they can get what they need without talking about the current grand jury stuff or their grand jury stuff. You know, I mean, they can probably get a lot of, and let's face it, because they call him now doesn't mean they can't call him again.
Well, would that have to, is that predicated upon their knowing what the grand jury is still looking at?
That's a great question, Master Patsy. I think that they have to almost think that there are unknowns, right? There's going to be unknowns to them, and they probably can't get all that information no matter what channels they try to get it through. So the question is, what can they get right now that's meaningful to their investigation, to their committee investigation, exclusive of that? So all they can go on is what they know, not what they don't know. So is there enough of what they know and what they want to ask about that's outside of the purview of that grand jury that it's worth their time? And that's a question that I don't have an answer to, but I would suspect that based upon, you know, if you listen to some of the statements of Adam Schiff and some of the statements of Jerry Nadler, but I'm thinking more of what Adam Schiff said last week about, you know, if you're okay with this, I'm not okay with it, but you're okay with this. And he went down a long list of things, right? So those are things that are known that are out in the open, and they want to ask questions about those kind of things. Maybe it's worth their time.
Hey, you know, I've been watching and listening to Schiff a lot. And it seems to me like that he's been hinting, and I think intentionally hinting, that he knows there's a lot of stuff there that the general public, or maybe even a large majority of Congress, doesn't know about yet. He just seems to be acting that way. And I find it hard to believe that he would go out on the limb as far as he's going if he didn't know a lot of the things that are backing his play that maybe a lot of other folks don't know about.
Yeah, I agree, because he's definitely putting himself out there on that. And yeah, I think so. And I think that strategically, you know, is it premature? I guess the question that, you know, is it premature to go ahead and go for a subpoena of Robert Mueller when these grand juries are still going on? I don't think so, because I think that Robert Mueller's, his part in this case has been played, so to speak. You know, he's handed off everything else to other folks. Now his office may still be trying the portions of those cases, and I understand that. But I think that, you know, as far as his findings on the report go, he's played his part on that. So I just wanted to give a real quick, and we can revisit what we're just talking about, but I just wanted to give a real quick summary of that thing that I alluded to. It was in a, you can look it up online, but it's been in the South China Morning Post and in the Guardian. On Wednesday 19th of December 2018, there was a secret case involving Mystery Corporation A, Mystery Corporation owned by Country A, that they filed a request to keep their identity secret in the U.S. Court of Circuit Court of Appeals, and heard, I think last week sometime or 2 weeks ago, and I don't know the outcome, but there was a secretive dispute over a subpoena related to them that goes back to December. So this has been going on for a while. So I do think that, just to tie that all together, that Barr is not just delaying. He's acting on behalf of this other party that has a lot of influence going on right now. And it's from a country. It's a corporation from another country. Curious enough.
It makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Yep.
The committee vote was 24-17 along party lines, with Democrats in favor and Trump's fellow Republicans opposed. Okay. First of all, I didn't realize that it was that tilted toward the Democratic side, 24-17. I really thought that the numbers would have been far closer. But it shows how much I know. Do you think that even this far into it, even with the vast majority of the public wanting to or thinking there is something else there, that there's 17 Republicans that don't want to know what's going on?
You know, it's disgusting, quite frankly, because if you go back and look at the way they handled the Clinton matter, which I'm not absolving his behavior in any way by saying this. I'm just talking about apples to apples. When Congress looks into a president's behavior, how did they react when they wanted to, have all the information disclosed then, versus how are they reacting now? It's purely political, in my opinion. I don't know that I think they just don't. They just want to obfuscate. They just want to delay. They just want to delay. I'm not talking about Barr at this moment, but in response to your question, yes, they just want to delay. They just want to obfuscate and keep from the light of day anything that could harm Trump, because ultimately they've hitched their wagon to his star, and they know that when he goes down, they're done. I mean, that you can't come back from this. So their last hope is to keep him afloat.
Well, I think a lot of that is pandering to a base, right?
Yep.
And I guess my biggest, and it kind of makes me wonder, I could maybe understand it in the Senate, although I don't condone it. I can understand the reasoning behind it, because, you know, if you're going to be reelected in anywhere, and there is a legitimate fear of being primaried, right, then you kind of have to sell your soul a little bit if you want to keep this, if you want to stay in power here, if you want to continue to go to the chambers every day.
Yeah, they've got more of a chance of losing to a primary opponent in the Republican Party than they do in some of these areas than they do to losing to a Democrat. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I guess this is one of those things where, you know, you be careful what you wish for, right? Because gerrymandering a district has now come back to bite you in the ass.
Yeah.
Right. Which is why you never skirt the rules.
Right.
Right. Because I tell students all the time, everybody who's ever been on my floor will hear me say, look, everything has a price. I don't care what it is. It could be the decisions you make. It could be the air you breathe. It could be anything. Pick something, the most ironic thing there is, the most, go out on a limb and pick something, the most stupid thing you could ever think of. there's a price to it. And it, you can either pay that price up front when it's cheap, or you can pay that price in the back end when it's expensive. It doesn't matter what it is, right? And these guys decided to gerrymander districts. They decided they were going to ensure themselves re-election. But they were short-sighted because they only looked at the enemy as the Democrats. They never looked at the enemy as these asshole Trump-toting base that is that they are now subjected to. So they almost have to sell their souls in order to stay elected or to stay in power. I almost don't feel bad for them, but it does make things frustrating because they have to pander to a base who just does not give a shit about the truth. They don't give a shit about the rule of law or right from wrong. They went their way and that's it. And they've sold out everything in order to get their way. And that is unfortunate. But now you have people on the Republican side who at one point I thought were upstanding people. I just didn't agree with them. Right. I didn't think ill of them. We just didn't see things the same way. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, it's the way it should be. But I wonder now, you know, looking at all of this and seeing how this skirting the rules has come back to bite them in the ass a little bit. Well, a lot. I shouldn't say a little bit. I say that far too often. I wonder how much of this and how much all 17. Are you serious? All 17 members of this committee don't want to know what's going on. That's absurd. That's beyond absurd. That's moronic.
Absolutely.
How do you not want to know?
They want to put their head in the sand. They want to bury their head in the sand.
Well, do they want to, or do they think they don't have a choice? Because if they do, they're not going to get reelected.
Well, that's it. I mean, absolutely. You know, you've hit it definitely on the head, but I think that that's their thing. You know, like, I'm afraid of what's going to happen. So if I put my head in the sand like an ostrich when he feels fear or she feels fear, then it'll go away. That fear is going to go away. So I think that, yeah, they're afraid of not getting reelected. They're afraid of what comes out harms their candidate, harms their chances. If they have a hand in allowing it to come out, they'll be excoriated by the base. If they don't stand up for their hero, then they're going to be excoriated by their base. So yeah. And as you said, it's a no-win situation for them because they wished for this. They wanted their power. They were drunken with this power, but now it's really coming back to bite them.
Let's kind of change gears for a second, but stay on topic. On March 20th. And I know this date exactly because it was my birthday. So it's kind of hard to forget the date, right? Trump decided to let everybody know that he was in full favor of the unredacted Mueller report being released to the world to see. And then the Mueller report was filed. And then you saw our president kind of change his tune a little bit. Now, he doesn't want it to be public. He's more than willing to let it go through Barr, right? He wants it to go through Barr. And he kept saying over and over and over and over again, through Barr. It's got to go through Barr. It's got to go through Barr. So I guess my question is to you, in your opinion, and I know neither of us have any way of knowing it, you know, we don't have those kind of connections. You think he saw the report? Or do you think obviously Barr saw it, but do you think he was given a heads up and said, hey, look, you really don't want people to see this?
My suspicion is yes. Suspicion is.
Well, yeah, I mean, we have no way of knowing. We're speculating.
Yeah. But yeah, I think based on, you know, all that you've laid out, it would make some sense to me that that's what's happened.
I mean, like I said, he said it on March 20th. This was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Right? Roughly. This was 2 weeks ago. He wanted the world to see this thing because it's going to exonerate him. And he's going to show the world once and for all that the Democrats were full of shit. Until somebody... Well, let me ask you this one before I go any further. Do you think he's actually seen the report yet?
Yes, I do. I think that... I mean, do I think he's read through 400 pages? No.
No, he doesn't right. know how to read.
And even if he did, he doesn't have the attention span to sit down and read 400 pages. He just wouldn't do that. So, but do I think they've given him excerpts and given him the Cliff Notes version and that he's looked at that and that they've told him about the potentially damaging parts? Absolutely, yes. I do think he's seen those.
Yeah, I completely agree. If he hasn't seen them, then somebody who he trusts, or as far as he can trust, saw it and said, dude, you really don't want people to see this because they're gonna see this and this and this and this and this and
yeah.
You're sunk.
I agree.
I really believe that because he turned 180 degrees almost overnight, right? Here's another question I have for you, Frank. And over the last couple of weeks, you have done a really really good job, I thought, when it came to calling out, I don't want to say hypocrisy in the media, but yeah, it kind of was. And you really used shone a spotlight on the USA Today as a great reference and a great example. And we kind of came to the conclusion that the USA Today is kind of the print version of Fox News. And as a side note, I just want to tell everybody, if you go to our Facebook page, if you go to Lessons from the Dojang Facebook page, you're going to see a video up there. If it hasn't been up yet, it's going to be here real soon. A YouTube video from the Times that really should scare the shit out of you when it comes to Fox News and how they decided that they were become state-run media. It's absolutely frightening. So I encourage everybody to go look at it. But I guess my question is, you know, you're looking at this whole thing. At some point, all of this, these smoke screens and all this shit has to come to an end, right? There's going to be a moment of truth.
Truth always outs.
Right. It eventually always does. Whenever you look at how these places and these entities are becoming a mouthpiece for everything that Trump and White House is doing, what do you think?
Well, a couple things come to mind, and you really are touching on the nerve right now with me, Master Patsy. This is one that's getting me fired up over the last couple of weeks, maybe over the last month or so. You know, first of all, the media has, and this is the darndest thing, you know, where the Trump blames the media for everything and he starts turning people against the media, and then the media falls into a trap and they get suckered into it. And that's, they're really falling further and further into the hole with the American public because they're afraid to stand up to the tyrant. And what happens is there's a chilling effect on the media, and then that chilling effect prevents them from doing their job properly. And that's what I think we're seeing right now. Instead of doing their job and saying, wait a minute, let's examine the facts here. There's a 400 page report that was summarized by 4 pages, and we got 4 pages to go on from this 400 page report. And what those 4 pages are, we're going to report on. This is what we can report on. And we're going to tell you, public, this is what we got. The 4 pages. We didn't get the 400 pages, but we know there were 400 pages. And as a newspaper and as journalists, we have to ask this question. If there's 400 pages, why is there only a 4-page summary? And if there's an executive summary that was done by Robert Mueller that would give you, you know, and for those who are listening, that I'm going to assume that our listeners know what an executive summary is, but that maybe some folks aren't familiar with that term. So I'm going to just go ahead and give a real quick little very, very quick explanation of what an executive summary is. An executive summary is like, let's say I write a really long report or complaint to the court or a motion, and I want to give just a brief outline so that when the clerk gets ready to read my brief or my complaint, I can give them a one page or a five page or whatever the case may be, executive summary, meaning like your time is so valuable and busy. I know you might not have time to read 100 pages this weekend. So here's my 10 pages to read. So with Mueller, maybe, you know, he might've given a 20 page executive summary for 400 pages. Why doesn't that 20 page executive summary suffice? Because don't you think that Robert Mueller, who's most intimately familiar with his own report, would know how to concisely pare it down and take out anything that's sensitive, i.e. grand jury information, yet give you the everything you need to know in this executive summary. So why, as journalists, why aren't we saying, well, wait a minute, why can't we see the executive summary? And why are you then paring down everything to a four page report? Those are the questions journalists should have asked right off the bat. And they should have been saying, okay, you gave us four pages, we'll report what you said in those four pages, but with a very, very skeptical eye, with these questions unanswered, we're going to tell the American public, we have not gotten to see the full report, nor have we gotten to see the executive summary. So all we have is this very flimsy four page summary. That's what they should have been reporting. But instead, they're afraid, because if you look at what Trump has been doing from day one, he's called the media the enemy of the state. After the summary comes out from Barr, he says, all these people owe me an apology. We should really start suing people. We should start jailing people that write bad, you know, misinformation. And he's got them scared. And he's got them afraid that if they do their jobs, he's going to turn against them. And he's going to turn the American public against them.
Well, that's a damn good question. Here's another question I have for you, because I'll be honest, at this point I want to get you a little fired up. Through this whole thing, the media has been referencing this, that whenever they talk about this four page report or this four page summary.
Butchered Sports, raw and unfiltered, the way you wish your local sports anchor would bring it to you. Find us on Twitter at Butchered Sports and on YouTube at Butchered Sports. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe.
Well, how about that? You know, the software we're using times out. That's good to know. That's good information.
Yeah.
Anyhow, welcome back, everybody. I guess that takes the burden off me of trying to put a hard break in here someplace. I'm going to go back to what I was saying before this thing timed out on us. If you look at this four page summary, that, let's face it, is garbage. The media is still, whenever they reference this whole thing, they are still referencing this thing as the Mueller report, or the Mueller report. I'm sorry. Folks, nobody's seen the Mueller report. They've only seen this four-page summary. Do you care to comment as to why these folks, and it doesn't matter what side, if you're left or right, it doesn't matter. All of them are referring to this four-page summary as the Mueller report and giving this summary credibility, as opposed to saying, look, this is just four pages, a four-page summary of a 400-page report. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I think it comes back to this fear thing and the chilling effect that, you know, Trump's campaign, and I don't mean his presidential campaign, I mean his campaign against the media and his campaign to become a tyrant in this country, has waged against and has laid to waste most of the media outlets to the point where they are afraid to give any kind of, to step out and say what you know, the Woodwards and Bernsteins would have said of past days. And that is, you know, like we just reviewed. I mean, I think they just say, okay, we got to go with the story as it is in front of us. We can't ask any tough questions yet. We don't have the opportunity to ask tough questions of anybody, and we don't have any more information to go on. But I think what they should really be doing is saying, calling it what it is. You know, we got a 4-page report. That's it. This is Barr's report. Don't call it the Mueller report. This is Barr's 4-page summary. We have Barr's 4-page summary. That's what they need to do. And that for some reason, whoever the editors are and the writers are not picking up on that. I think it'll happen. But, you know, it's one of those things, damage has been done to some extent, you know. But on the other hand, I'll go to this point. I give credit to a lot of American people because, you know, the polling numbers show overwhelmingly the majority of people in America are not buying this. They think it's a load of crap.
Yeah, I agree with you. It seems to me with all the polling data that I've seen, and, you know, I think we're going to go off on a little bit of a tangent here, but of all the polling data I've seen, I've read two things into this. Number one, people aren't buying this 4-page summary of a 400-page report. And number two, you have people on both sides, or networks on both sides, or entities on both sides who are, and honest to God, Frank, I don't know if they're just lazy. And you had touched on this with USA Today earlier, you know, a couple weeks ago, I think, about how they just regurgitated things. Or if they're just doing things because they want to drum up eyeballs and not really living up to journalistic integrity whenever it comes to how they're approaching this and how they're explaining this, these things. It seems to me that they're just looking for, you know, they just want to be shock jocks if this was a radio show, right? They just want to be shock jocks and just get people to talk about them. And it's all about eyeballs, and it has nothing to do with integrity of journalism.
I agree. It's all about that. And it goes back to the basics of, like, Trump is good for the media, you know, because he puts eyeballs on their papers. Anytime they write his name in there, anytime they lead with a story on the news about him, you know, they've empowered this beast, this monster, because it's something that, and if you look at statements from network execs, they've said as much. They've said, maybe he's not good for the country, but he's sure good for our bottom line.
Yeah, you see that a lot. And I don't see it more black and white than I see on Morning Joe, right? Because I'm not a big fan of Morning Joe. I never was. I never will be. I don't like Joe Scarborough at all. And I'm not a big fan of Mika's either, because I think she sells out on a constant basis. Whenever you consider her lineage, when we consider, you know, like her father was, when you look at the integrity her father had and you look at what she's doing, she's almost undercutting him in so many ways. But these guys were on the Trump train, right? I mean, they were allowing him to call it in. He didn't have to show up. He could just call it in. And then he said something about Mika that wasn't exactly flattering, and all of a sudden, this guy's the biggest piece of shit on the planet. So their journalistic integrity immediately comes into question.
Absolutely.
And yet they seem to be the Morning Standard, because I don't think CNN can hold a candle to them as far as eyeballs go. Maybe I'm wrong, and I honestly, I hope I am. Nobody gets more morning eyeballs than Fox News does, but that's the demographic that is able to watch TV at that time of day, I think, more than anything else. So they're going to get that demographic. And they're going to get those big numbers. And even then, you know, they're talking about three Mexican countries. So let that sink in for a minute. But you're looking at a whole bunch of people who have this personal axe to grind. And even these folks are not separating Barr's summary with and the Mueller report. They're kind of mashing it all together. And that really has me concerned.
And it should. And it absolutely should. And it should raise everybody's blood pressure. It should raise everybody's anger level. And people should be demanding that, you know, our fourth estate, which is what the media is called, our fourth estate, our fourth, you know,
fourth pillar.
They should be the ones that the public should be saying, do your job. Do your job. And it is your job to hold, you know, power to account. It's your job to hold them accountable. As uncomfortable as that may be for the people in power, guess what? That's what we want you to do. That's what we expect you to do.
Right. That's your calling, right? I mean, that's why you're there. That is literally why
that's
you're
right.
there. We have had amendments to our Constitution just for this
that's
purpose.
Right. So we should be and very, very upset and very concerned about the fact that they're wilting under this moment.
Yeah, it's disturbing on many levels, and I don't care if you're on the left or on the right. And please, folks, if you are on the right, and the only reason you pay $120 a month is so you can watch Fox News, please understand that in the long run, this is going to come back to bite you in the ass. Okay, you need integrity in all things, even when it's not pleasant. You need integrity. And the fact that we're seeing a lack of integrity, whether you watch Fox News 24/7 or you watch MSNBC 24/7, whether you subscribe to Breitbart or Huffington Post, it shouldn't matter. You need integrity because that pendulum's constantly swinging. And when it's in your favor, it's the greatest thing in the world. But whenever that pendulum swings the other way and it's against you, it's terrible. It's as bad as death.
Absolutely.
So understand that.
And
it should bother everybody that this integrity in journalism is frighteningly absent.
They're wilting under the pressure, and it's a shame. There's very few people out there willing to stand up and speak truth to power and to question power and to question authority. But one person who was willing recently this week, and I think we owe some of our time to this, is the woman who was in the White House and spoke about the circumventing the national security to give security clearances to over 25 people who did not deserve those security clearances, or at least had significant questions raised about whether they should have security clearances. But the full vetting of those 25 individuals was short-circuited by somebody in higher power. And this individual in the White House came to Congress and exposed this. And we have somebody who was willing to stand up at the risk of their own job, at the risk of their own personal, let's face it, in today's society, their own personal safety, their own livelihood, their own well-being, because if they don't have a job, they're going to have trouble making ends meet. But this woman was willing to come forward and speak truth when it was inconvenient for her to do so. And, you know, we have 25 people who have top security clearances that didn't deserve to have those, that not just didn't deserve to, but serious question where our national security is at interest. They would not have gotten a security clearance, a top security clearance, but there was somebody that circumvented that. Again, these are norms that, you know, whether you're Republican or Democrat, should be absolutely raising the hair on the back of everybody's neck.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, the best part of this whole thing, and what I thought was, honest to God, Frank, the most badass thing I've seen in a long time, was whenever this woman was outed, and her name was made public, and I'm not going to sit here and make her name public because I really didn't want to expose her to anything. Whenever she was very apparent who this person was, and she was mentioned by name, and it was made to the world, it was made public to the world what she did. She went to work the next day. She didn't resign. She didn't call off. She didn't hide behind anything. She showed up the next day to do her job. Dude, that's the most badass thing I've seen in a long fucking time. I got to be honest with you. That's epically badass. I mean, that's somebody who, you know, from my side of the tracks, it does the shit that I do every day. Who I look at her and I go, dude, I don't know what you're doing, but holy shit. God bless.
She's got what some folks would say is big D energy, even though she's a, you know.
Yeah, honestly,
but that's it, man. She's walking around. She's walking around with the energy of, you know, of a hundred strong people inside of her.
I mean, that is really, that's insane. And I'll be honest, I don't know too. I really do not know, in all honesty, I'm not trying to hype anything up. I don't know too many people that have, to use a professional wrestling metaphor, the intestinal fortitude to be outed like this, to have be exposed like this, and then show up the next day and like, I don't give a fuck, I'm doing my job. That's badass. I'm sorry. If you want a role model, look there, because that is badass. That's
yeah, and good for her. And as much as I'm angry for the media,
the pressure, I'm proud of this girl for putting herself out there and being willing to do this for our country. Let's face it, she should be lauded as a hero. She is a hero. She's standing up for our country.
Yeah,
she at her own personal expense.
Yeah, and I mean, I put her up there with, and I'm sorry, I'm not doing her justice. The doctor, what's her name, that was in the Kavanaugh hearings. I mean, she's still being pounded, right? And this is a woman who, if you saw the hearings, she was scared to death. She was terrified. And yet, she stood up and she said, this is my story, and I'm telling it, and I don't give a shit about the consequences. You need to know this. And this stacked against her, and she knew it going in, right? She knew it going in. The system was stacked against her. There's no way in hell she was going to come out of this thing. I don't want to say as a hero, because then that might be putting a false finish line to what she was doing. But this was a no-win situation for her, and you could tell there she was terrified, and yet she stood up, and she and the integrity that it takes to do something like that, the I don't want to say belief in oneself, or just the character. How about that? The character of somebody to stand up and say, look, this is wrong. This is what happened. And I'm putting my neck out on the line. And I've had to move 3 or 4 times, and I'm getting death threats every day. But you need to know this. That's insane.
It's serious.
That's a hero.
She's a hero.
I don't know how else to say it, but that's a hero. And this woman who testified in front of Congress here, you know, when we just found out about her a couple of days ago, and like I said, I don't want to out her and give her name. The fact that she did this and then showed up to work the next day, like, she just, I mean, if it was a guy, it'd be like, I don't give a fuck, I'm just going back to work, and that's all there is to it. And if you got something to say, but you know, we're gonna have words, but we're gonna go on our way. That's badass. I'm sorry. Those are things that the martial artists strive for. That they, a lot of the people who do the things I do, spend their entire lives trying to find. And this woman did it with grace and dignity and just total. I'm just going to do my job and just strength. That is strength. If you want to see strength, don't look at Trump. Look at this woman, because that is strength.
Absolutely, because she has no power, no platform, no nothing.
No,
but
nothing.
She was willing to, because in her view, she was saying, look, this is the office of the White House. This is the office of the President of the United States of America that has the ability to grant security clearances at the highest level and to ask for security clearances at the highest level, and to pull strings this way. And I don't think this is what we should be doing. This isn't what we've been doing in this place, and it's not what we should be doing in this place. And because of a history of knowing what's right and what's not right, there's right and there's wrong. And she knew the difference between right and wrong, and she stood up for what was right at her own personal expense. And yes, you know, to say that she knows what the outcome, she doesn't know what the outcome is going to be. She doesn't know what that's going to lead to, because in our upside down world right now, you know, there are going to be people who say she's a bad seed, she had something to, an axe to grind, whatever story they're going to want to make up about her.
Yep.
So she knows that it's personal risk. Absolutely a huge personal risk.
And as they say, and yet she persevered. That's right. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. You know what, Frank? That's a great note then to end this week's pod on. Because if that doesn't give people a glimmer of hope or end this thing on a positive note, whenever we spend so much time, whether we're on television or on the radio, wherever it is, wherever you're getting your sources of news, to be a negative thing, if that doesn't give you a positive outlook on life, where, you know, like I said, if you're looking for a role model, if you're looking for to look at somebody who is doing things the right way and is a positive, if that doesn't do it to you, and if the doctor who testified in the Kavanaugh hearings doesn't do it for you, I don't know what to tell you.
Check your pulse.
Because check your pulse, right? Because you're not paying attention. It absolutely flabbergasted me. And, you know, we didn't even touch on the fact that these are two women, right? We haven't even talked about that. And I'll be honest, I'm glad we didn't, because we're just looking at it as two people who were doing this. And to me, that's a far bigger story. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't want to separate people. I just look at it like these are two people who really had nothing to gain other than keeping their integrity intact. And that, to me, that's amazing. It really is.
Absolutely. And I like that we're ending on that too, because it is something that I think historically we'll look back on and say, these are defining moments. You know, when we talk about heroes in the past in this country, we always have, you know, heroes that went to sacrifice themselves for the greater good. We talk about people like that. We talk about people who took stands. We talk about people who took risks and went into space. We talk about people who, you know, we knew they were the risk takers when we look back at them. Yeah. And this is somebody who took a huge risk to try to protect the integrity of that office and protect the integrity of our country. And she did it at great personal risk. And it will be a historical moment, I think.
I hope so. And I hope she gets the credit eventually, because she's going to get butchered, but hopefully eventually she gets the credit that she rightfully deserves, because I'm sorry, dude. I must have said it three or four times already. That's absolutely badass. It really is. I mean, that's Chuck Norris level badass.
Yep.
Right. It really is. Okay, Frank, I think maybe we should wrap it up. This has been a great pod. It really has. We only, you know, we started off talking about it. We talked beforehand about one subject, and it's amazing how it kind of led into other things. And hopefully, you know, people understand that at the end of the day, it's not one subject or one thing. It's the umbrella. It's everything that this stuff encompasses, and it's a reflection upon us.
It all ties together.
It all ties together. No one's an island. Right. And I think it was Hillary Clinton who said that it takes a village. Right. And it absolutely does. So until next week, my friend, I think maybe we should end it here. And I want to tell everybody who's listening, like we say, Master Grant and I say every day, like every Sunday, like you and I say every Wednesday, for everybody who's listening, your time is very valuable. And the fact that you're willing to spend some of that time with us, believe me when I tell you, it means a great deal to us. You really have no idea how important your time is to us. So until next week, Frank, let's call it a pod. It was a great pod, and hopefully we can hold the standard up. So to everybody listening, Frank and I thank you, and goodbye, and God bless.